Kelly Clark, Keeper of My Heart, the name of her song. 11 minutes past 8 o'clock here in the Central Time Zone of East Dakota. We're joined by Dr. Don Clark. Don is a biochemist and member of the Board of Creation Moments and joins us just about pretty near every Tuesday morning. And we talk about things scientific like faith and science and creation and evolution and such things. Got an interesting one for you today. Don, how you doing? How's garden life in Garden Valley today?
Oh, well, let's see. It started off being overcast. It was bright and sunny yesterday and warm. Mm-hmm. When the sun comes out, it starts to get a little warm. So I don't know if I haven't looked at the weather, but it looks like we might have rain, at least in the next couple of days. But otherwise, if we don't, we are pushing the 80s and... hopefully we aren't getting into the 90s yet.
It's a little early for that, I suppose, but it could happen. We're looking at 75 and thunderstorms today up here in East Dakota. So the thunderstorm would be nice, a nice gentle one, nothing severe, but it would remind us of things like summer again if that were to happen. There's an article in the Atlantic Monthly magazine, and Don and I were just talking about it off the air, and Don, being a scientist, has a gripe. These general distribution magazines don't always treat a subject with a whole lot of scientific caution. But then, Don, isn't it true that neither do paleontologists?
Well, that's true. They take a leap of faith because of their assumptions. And the assumption is, of course, that we evolved from animals and we evolved from apes. And so, therefore, we're always looking, always looking for that missing link that we could never quite find. Well, there's a new finding now, and it apparently is... they found some new fossils in some caves in South Africa. Actually, they found them in 2015, but this article indicates that, we now know how old they are. Hmm. So they've dated these fossils. They found over 1,500 hominid fossils, fragments, which you're reading down the article, it looks like maybe about representative of maybe 30 individuals or 300 individuals, sorry. Mm-hmm. Both, it looks like adults as well as children. And so that raises a bunch of questions, but they're dating these to 236 to 335,000 years ago, which is confounding for them. Now, why? Why is it confusing? Well, because these look like humans, and the only distinction that separates them from humans is that they have a small head. Now, we're not given any information as to say, these are either small people. In other words, their whole skeleton is small, and therefore the cranial area is small too. Or they're big people and they're with the small head, and then therefore are they ape or are they humans? Mm-hmm. Their feet appear to be feet of a being. Let's say that walks upright. And their hands are not ape-like, they're more human-like, but they classify them separately only because of the small head, it appears, at least from the article. So, now what are we to do with this? These small heads would indicate that these should be millions of years old. Not 200,000.
That's because they've already dated the emergence of modern man at a certain date, which would be about the same time as aging methods date these new fossils. Now, are they fossils or bones? There's a difference, isn't there? Explain the difference between a fossil and a bone.
Well, yes, these are bones that were apparently covered in sediment. Which should be a clue for us, because they have to kind of dig them out. So, a fossil, so it's would be classified as a fossil. It's not fossilized. That is, it doesn't appear to be have become mineralized.
I thought that was the definition of a fossil, though. It was mineral and not bone, but apparently it can be a bone encased in stone then.
Yes, apparently. Mm-hmm. Yes. So they're calling them fossils. Mm-hmm. Later part of the article, they say, well, we dated this by, scraping the tooth, getting the enamel off the tooth and then doing some radio dating of the tooth, and we radio dated the soil that was around them, or the stone that was around them, and like I said, this, you're not given a whole lot of information. You're not given whether or not these individuals were all kind of jumbled up, and all of these bones are mixed up, or whether or not they were nicely laid out. Maybe some of them were laid out and others were just pieces found here and there. Now, all of that to me is clues as to how these folks, got there in the first place. Mm-hmm. Of course, one of their assumptions, the main researcher, Lee Berger, is assuming that this was a burial site.
Well, you'd think if there was a concentration of bodies, either bodies were dumped there or buried there with some ceremony, but somehow to have 300 bodies together doesn't seem like it would happen by accident.
You wouldn't think, unless this was a collection of individuals that got trapped in a catastrophe.
Oh, now there's an idea.
Somehow they, were congregated together, and then all of a sudden a big wave or a big...
Looking at the cave as refuge in a disaster of some kind.
Perhaps, although if you look at, the picture of the kind of the cross-section of earth, if you will, or the soil, you can see that it's they've got striations through it, which kind of indicates either this cave was formed after that, after the striations were formed, mm-hmm. which would mean that this is some type of post-flood event that created the caves initially, or perhaps the caves were, maybe there was water in there at the time, water got entrapped, and hence people along with it got entrapped at the time the caves were formed, during the time the striations were laid down, or the layers of earth were laid down, earth and rock, which would indicate, of course, I'm indicating that this was possibly laid down at the time of the flood. Looking at the beginning hypothesis, well, if either you've got a evolutionary point of view or you've got a creation point of view, the creation point of view would say, let's see, is this post-flood or is this during the flood, or are these antediluvian folks, or are they post-diluvian folks, or they happen to get trapped in the sediment that was being laid down at the time of the flood. Of course, the evolutionists would say, these are the layers were there for millions and millions of years, and then this happened to be just a cave that folks were perhaps deposited in or got somehow trapped in. It's interesting that there's another set of caves not too far from this site that they're also exploring, and that cave appears to have not only these types of human remains, but also animal remains, which would indicate that, maybe everything got laid down at the same time, or the animals came in and were scavenging the humans at some point in time, although they did mention that the bones didn't appear to be scattered by animals or chewed up, which would be, you know, evidence that the animals were coming in and munching on the dead humans. So the big question is, of course, is this a new species that we've found? Not human and not monkey, if you will, or are they actually human and they just happen to have, you know, smaller heads and laid down about the time of the flood? And so your assumptions, this goes back to how you do investigations, in this type of research. How you do your investigations really depends on, in the conclusions that you draw, really depends on what your original assumptions are. Mm-hmm. And it just baffles me why these folks just don't even take the suggestion that, hey, you know, perhaps the creation story is accurate. Let's look at it from that point of view. And what conclusions do we draw from that? But that is never, you know, never hypothesized.
Ruled out from the beginning, yeah, from the get-go.
Because I can guarantee you'd come up with different conclusions. You know, even if this is a unique kind of individual, I mean, it would be fun to know that, you know, and not necessarily looking for a missing link. But, these are completely, they're not chimpanzees and they're not human. So there must be something else.
How do we decide if a collection of bones or fossils is human? I mean, is there a single indicator? Is it a group of indices that say, okay, check, 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 must be human? How do we know it's human just because it's shaped like a human?
Well, yes, and I'm not a paleo anthropologist by any means, but you know, you look at the you look at the skeletal structure and as many mm-hmm. pieces as you can find. The first question you ask is this creature or is this individual, do they walk upright? And, you know, the bones of the feet would be the main indicator there, I would suppose. And so you would look at that, and they've already determined that, yes, they definitely look human-like from the feet point of view. Mm-hmm. The other thing is you look at the hands. Okay, so the hands, if it's a, we know that chimpanzees walk upright, but their feet are a little different than ours because they're grabbing on the trees. Then you look at their hands and you say, okay, are these prehensile hands that they, you know, are designed for tree climbing and stuff like that? Or are they more like our hands, which, you know, are designed for, you know, not climbing trees mm-hmm. necessarily? And so they've determined that both of those indicators are indeed human-like, if not human. And so their only other determining aspect is the brain size. And without any published information here, you can't say, is this a normal variation on the humankind? Mm-hmm. In other words, can we find humans today with brain sizes, you know, this small, let's say? Mm-hmm. My guess is that the answer would be yes. Mm-hmm. So either this is a variation on the kind on the humans, and then again, you know, they're not giving you the proportion of, are these 6 foot tall individuals or are they 4 feet?
There are still pygmy races, are there not, in parts of Africa, very small people, and then of course, Don, there are leprechauns.
Well, that's right. I mean, you know, you've got leprechauns. Now, I don't know, you know, the leprechauns probably didn't migrate to South Africa.
Probably not, yeah.
But maybe they came from South Africa, and this is the this is their heritage. This is their, you know, this is Papa Leprechaun.
Well, I hate to make fun of science, but sometimes you do wonder about the jump to conclusions they make that, well, we already know that evolution is a fact, therefore these are human-like. And so they must belong on the family tree. Even that is an assumption, isn't it? This notion of a family tree that we have.
Well, of course it is. And, you know, instead of saying this is just a variation on the kind of, you know, humans, then we're going to say, oh, because something doesn't quite fit, then we're going to call it something else. And, oh, it's this missing link that we've been looking for eons, since the time of Darwin.
How would they know the missing link if they found it? It would supposedly have characteristics of the one who came before and the one who came afterward. I suppose a transitional being where the old characteristics were being dropped off and the new characteristics were being incorporated. But how could a scientist possibly determine with even a single full skeleton that it was a transitional link of some kind?
Well, as you said, they would have to have morphology of the old and the new.
Mm-hmm.
And the only old here is, like I said, the smaller head. But even the skeleton that they're showing you a picture of looks quite human and not ape-like, necessarily. It's an interesting thing. I noticed in the article they're still calling Neanderthal this pre-human individual, but creation scientists have already determined that it is a full human and probably old, very old, and immediately post-flood individuals who did, you know, according to biblical history, lived much longer than, you know, much longer than we lived, you know, even today. So then Neanderthal, you usually see these skeletons of these of the head being having this furrowed brow and very heavy features. That happens as you grow old. And if you're 500 years old, your brow is going to be pretty darn heavy. Mm-hmm. So you're going to look more probably ape-like. And so they're still calling the Neanderthal a, you know, a pre-hominid, a pre-human, if you will. And where indeed the creation scientists who have looked at the same evidence and determined that no, these were fully human, and indeed probably pretty old folks, and dating them back to the transition, the you know, peoples that came, let's say from the plain of Shinar, which of course is where the Tower of Babel, you know, is or was, and have migrated north into the German area that where they found these skeletons in the cave. So, my guess is that this is maybe something similar, and either these caves are were formed at the time of the flood and are a post that the people that they found in there are post-flood individuals, or the other explanation is, well, you got three explanations, really. Either you had that scenario, or these people actually got trapped in the flood and got encased in the mud.
That's an interesting presupposition to work from, and to see if the rest of this stuff falls in line logically. But it appears that these scientists don't have a logical explanation for this because it conflicts with their earlier assumptions. This is causing waves throughout the world of paleontology.
Well, it is, and even their own admission, it says this is complicated. This is just complicating our story. You know, our story is getting messed up by these these new findings. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's unsettling. Well, you know, if it's complicated, then maybe look at your assumptions. Mm-hmm. Maybe look and say, maybe our assumptions are wrong. You know, so from a creationist point of view, you've got three options. One, these are folks that landed in the cave after the cave was formed, after the flood, or these are the folks that got trapped in this pocket during the time of the flood when the deposits were being laid down. Or, you know, three, these are not humans at all, but a different species. A different kind that, you know, got trapped. Mm-hmm. Now, the latter is probably much less likely, but the other two options, in other words, these are fully human individuals and not monkeys. Why would you have a tribe of monkeys there? But, you know, it's probably, they're probably human. And why they were in the caves seemed to be, to be a more interesting, you know, investigation in the first place, and why they happened to be there, and how did the caves form, and then were these people in the caves before, while the cave was being formed, or did they go there after the cave was formed and got trapped or something? You know,
it's interesting. They talk about the six cavers who discovered all these fossil fragments. They were all female. All skinny, all short, and, well, all female. So I'm wondering now if maybe this was a cave in existence back then, and this was simply an adaptation, a variation in kind, so that they could navigate their way in and out of these small caves. Maybe they lived there. I mean, that's as logical as anything else I've read in this article.
Well, it's you know, it's very possible, and maybe this cave was, you know, used kind of as a maybe even as a birthing center, because it's you don't want to, you know, it's quiet, it's isolated, and maybe the women, you know, could fit through the narrow openings of the cave, whereas, you know, men, guys, bigger bone structure and everything can't fit through. Even the lead scientist, Lee Berger, he went into the other caves, which have a little bit bigger opening, and he said, "I'll never go back in because I almost got stuck coming out."
Yeah, that would be a panicky feeling, wouldn't it? Stuck underground.
It would. I wouldn't go in between two rocks. In the first place.
I don't think so. Well, science is, it seems to me, a whole string of fragmentary hard evidence tied together by assumptions. And if one of the early assumptions happened to be wrong, it seems to me that the whole thing falls apart. And that's what it looks like is happening in this story, that they need to go back. Wouldn't it be fun to turn over the investigation to, say, a modern crime lab to come up with some more of the other reasons why these bones were gathered in one place, and see what other clues from other scientific disciplines are available to help explain that, like geology, for example. I'm told, I'll ask you, I'm told that especially in archaeology, there's been a long history of independent finds and stories built and assumptions made, with archaeologists not talking to each other and not sharing evidence, and not sharing evidence across disciplines either, from geology to paleontology to chemistry and to physics and all the other things. Is that true? Are scientists not, with all the communication available to us these days, you think they'd be talking to each other?
Well, you would think, I mean, that's biochemistry actually came about because the chemist and the biochemist, the biologists were talking to each other.
Good thing.
And it developed a new field called biochemistry, because the chemistry of life. But up until that point, it was the chemists were looking at small molecules. The biologists were looking at these macromolecules and scratching their heads. We can't make anything of it. And then finally, they got together with X-ray crystallographers and discovered the structure of DNA, for example. But across disciplinary, you know, you'd have to put together a research team of multidisciplined individuals, which one would think would be the thing to do, especially when you're investigating something like this, mm-hmm. because you want to know the history of the cave, I would think. Mm-hmm. You'd want to know, okay, I mean, yes, they're using some into disciplinary things because they're doing radio dating, but you want to know, you know, how these people or how these individuals got in there, you know, to the first place, and then do forensic research. I mean, you want a forensic scientist or two or three, you know, to be involved, because they are used to looking at bones and used to saying, okay, are these human, these are something else, or what do the bones tell us? So there was a television series called Bones. Mm-hmm. And that's a multidisciplinary group of people, you know, that are working together to solve these murder mysteries. The only evidence that they have are the bones, and of course the land around them. So, mm-hmm. Their team is working to identify the individual and to say where this individual was and how did they die and what evidence do the bones give. Well, you know, if we can do that with people that died, let's say 30, 40 years ago, and figure out what the crime was, one would think that we could do the same thing with something like this. And so an interdisciplinary, you know, team would be... I think would be of interest to investigate these things without pre-assumptions, you know, mm-hmm. without going in and saying, oh, you know, this has to be this. Mm-hmm. Now, of course, if a paleoanthropologist, you know, determines or at least says that this is a new interspecies and possibly a new missing link, that's going to make big news. You know, mm-hmm. if you say this is a small human, I don't know how much news you're going to get and how much research funding you're going to get.
Well, and there's a point. Money gets into science at some point and changes its very nature, corrupts it in a very real sense, I think. So that's another factor in this is now this has got three universities involved in it. University of Wisconsin is involved in it. University of Witwatersrand in South Africa and James Cook University in Australia. So there are a whole lot of experts. Maybe it's a case of too many cooks, do you suppose?
Well, too many cooks with the same hypothesis. Mm-hmm. You know, you would think, and unfortunately, that's what science has done. They have eliminated, if you say that, hey, you believe in God and you believe in a creator, and so let's perhaps look at the puzzle from that hypothesis, you're ousted. You know, so mm-hmm. The universities have purified themselves from any other type of thinking. Which in a scientific endeavor where you're trying to uncover the truth, or at least, you know, the possibilities, you don't want to eliminate any possibilities, but they have already self-eliminated a hypothesis, so therefore have eliminated possibilities from their thinking. You know, and then, of course, the National Geographic picks this stuff up. And you know, and publishes it, and says that this is great science. Well, unfortunately, it's a one-sided science, which we see over and over and over again in these fields. And not only is it you know, in the field of paleoanthropology, but it's also in the field of biochemistry. I mean, the field of biology and the field of other areas of science where you have eliminated, you know, a certain hypothesis from your thinking just because you don't like the conclusion.
Mm-hmm. By the way, I put a second link in the chat window at brokenroadradio.com. It's to a more scientific explanation of these findings at elifesciences.org. And on that page, if you're interested in following up, there are lots more links to associated stories on this, because it's really kind of taken the world of paleoanthropology by storm here, and it's caused some confusion there, and they're questioning some of their earlier assumptions, which is probably a healthy thing to do. And just so everybody knows, there is another source for information, scientific information, that relates to the biblical creation story, and you may just find it very persuasive, and you can find a lot of it at creationmoments.com. That's the website that you can link to from brokenroadradio.com. Over on the right-hand side of the page, you'll see Creation Moments. Click on that. It'll take you to their website. By the way, they're just about to get a brand new website over at Creation Moments, but you'll find a wealth of resources there. Lots of interesting stuff to go through, whether it's the written articles or the radio program, which you hear twice daily on this station, or DVDs and photographs. Lots to examine there at creationmoments.com. Don, we're thankful that you stopped by this morning, and it was delightful to talk with you and learn a little bit about this, about leprechauns, I think.
Yep, there we go. Yeah, I think maybe these folks actually migrated from Ireland and then came down to South Africa.
And those little green hats would have disappeared many years ago by now, I imagine.
Exactly. So, yeah, you lose the clothes when you only have the bones.
Don, take care. We'll see you next week. By the way, David says say hi. He couldn't make it here this morning. He's out.
Oh, yeah, we missed him. We missed him.
Yeah. He'll be back. See you next week.
Okay.
Take care.
All right, very good. Have a great week.